This is 4:55 on Wednesday, December 4th. All right. Wednesday, 0 degrees outside.
Yeah, we
didn't
realize
we were. Yeah, well, that's why we're in Poland. Okay, so I said last time I didn't think I would talk about securing wireless LANs, and I'm actually not really going to talk about securing wireless LANs. I'm going to talk about an attempt to secure wireless LANs that didn't work very well, because I think the failure is more interesting than the success. So I will talk about that, and because I think it has some useful lessons for us in there. And then we will finish up the chapter by talking about firewalls and intrusion detection systems. That's what IDS stands for here. Before I start, any questions? Project questions? They've died down now that people are back in class and it's not due for another week. I should warn you, I will be traveling from after the final exam in this class until approximately the time that the project is due. So I'm not going to be very responsive during that time, unfortunately, to your questions. So I'd suggest you get far enough along at least to know what your questions are before that.
So is it supposed to take requests from browsers and then you port that through another the socket or whatever, or is it supposed to make the request itself, the server client?
I completely did not understand that question.
Okay. I'll ask after class.
No, try again. It might be interesting.
So I'm just confused at exactly how I understand that it needs to accept like a request for a website and
uh-huh.
then send it out to that website,
uh-huh.
get it back, and then send it.
Right.
To
okay.
where it's supposed to go, where it originally came from. But what I'm wondering is, it supposed to get that request from a browser?
Yes,
it will send it out itself and then get it back and send it back to that browser.
Back to the browser. And the way you get the browser to do that is you go into the browser configuration and point the browser at your proxy using the browser's network connection settings.
Okay.
Okay?
Alright, cool.
Unfortunately, that means that everything from that browser is going through your proxy, so if your proxy doesn't work, you can't do any research to find out why your proxy doesn't work, why you need a second browser. Okay, that's not configured that way. And then somebody noticed that when they did this in Chromium or something, I don't remember what they said, making the change in one browser sort of had the effect globally, and you definitely don't want that to happen. So I don't know what happened there, but if somebody doesn't figure it out, let me know. Okay, so a case of crypto gone bad. So when wireless networks, Wi-Fi networks, 802.11 networks, got started, people rapidly realized that there would need to be some form of security associated with them, and they came up with this thing called WEP, which stands for Wired Equivalent Privacy, which meant that, or implied that, that your wireless network would be as secure as a wired network. Well, they really blew it. But this was the way things were done for about 10 years. So it uses symmetric key cryptography to provide confidentiality, end host authentication optionally, and data integrity. But the real way to think about it is that you have a wireless network, and you want to keep other people from using it. either seeing what you're doing on it or even using it at all. And the protection at that comes from this symmetric key cryptography. Now there's a practical problem that they felt they had to solve, which was that they needed to ensure that when a packet was received, the receiver could decrypt the packet, regardless of whether the receiver had received previous packets. Remember, because in wireless networks, packets disappear all the time due to the things that we talked about before. So they said, we need to be able to separately decrypt every packet, and therefore we can't use certain techniques that we would normally use to ensure that key material is not being reused and all kinds of other things. Various good practices. Okay? And it needed to be efficient. Well, let's not worry about that. So here's the background of what they did. So they used what's called a symmetric stream cipher. And we didn't really concentrate very much on this when we talked about cryptography. But the idea of a stream cipher is that you put your key into a pseudo random number generator, essentially, that spits out bits. And, you know, you can have as many bits out of that key stream as you would like to have, as opposed to a block cipher, remember, which is one that you put in a key and it spits out a certain number of bytes worth of key material, right? Or which sort of, well, we talked, it's not that necessarily key stream based. It does the shuffling and the transformations and all that stuff that we talked about for DES and AES and the like. But a stream cipher is really, excuse me, is really based on this idea that we're going to get a key stream and then we're going to XOR that with the data. So you get an incoming message, you get a key stream, you produce the ciphertext by XORing the key stream with the message, and you produce the message by XORing the key stream with the ciphertext, the basic stuff. And it just so happens that WEP uses the RC4 cipher, but that turns out to be the least of its problems. Okay, so here's sort of where they went wrong. It had to do with separate encryption. So the way it works is, remember the all-purpose watchword of using this kind of cryptography or any kind of cryptography is that you don't reuse the keys, right? You don't, especially this XORing type thing. You must not ever use the same key stream for different data, because if you do and you happen to know the data or know the difference between the data, you will be able to find out the key stream. So what they did here was they said, well, I can't just use the same, I can't just start in the same state with the key stream generator for every packet, that is, just send in the key. Instead, I will produce something called an initialization vector along with the key, and I'll pick that for every packet, okay, so that I get a different key stream coming out for every packet. And then I'll have a way to tell the recipient what the initialization vector was. It's not a secret, it just causes the key stream generator to do something different. Okay, so this is probably, well, this illustrates something. So we start with the data, we add a checksum to it, we encrypt it using the key and the initialization vector, we get that, and then we stick the initialization vector in plain text into the message. and that's what we actually send over the network. So anybody can see the initialization vector, it's only the key that remains secret. That's all we have to say about that. Here's a pretty picture. So if you've ever set up a Wi-Fi network using WEP, you know you've been given the choice between a 64-bit, so-called 64-bit key and a 128-bit key. That's already a lie in that the key is actually only 104 bits or 40 bits. The other 24 bits come from the initialization vector. Okay, so already it's kind of weak. It's weaker than you thought, because the 128 is really the 104 plus the 24-bit initialization vector. All right. So, you feed in the initialization vector. You stick it in the packet like that. You feed in the key. That sets up the key sequence generator to produce the bits of the key stream. You XOR that with the data that you want to send, and you get the ciphertext. Okay? And this is supposed to be secure because you use a new initialization vector for every frame. And on the reception side, the receiver gets this in plain text, so it can feed it into its key generator based on the key that you're using. The key ID here is just the idea that there may be multiple different keys set up, and you just pick which one you're going to use. Nothing security related about that, not a problem particularly. All right, and so you're able to decrypt it and all that. That's good. Okay. The problem with this is, remember that key stream generator. It's deterministic. It takes in an initialization vector and the key produces a key stream. If you feed in the same initialization vector, and the same key, you'll get the same key stream, and you start at the beginning every time. Right? So, you're reusing an XORed key stream. It's not safe. And so it's very easy for an attacker to observe enough traffic to see a situation in which the initialization vector has been reused. And once it does that, it knows essentially the key stream that corresponds to that initialization vector. Okay? And once it knows that, it can force the system to do interesting things that ultimately get it the password, and then things are all broken. Okay? So for a long time people thought this was okay, it's a weakness, but it's not so bad. But then April 2007, people write a paper that show how to break 104-bit WEP keys in less than 60 seconds. Okay? All right, so that's how much protection WEP networks have these days. Right there. How much sophistication does it take? Do you need to go off and get an academic paper and study the technique? Nah. Go on the internet. Get Backtrack. Make a bootable CD. Boot it. pick your graphical interface. Right? I mean, this is the level of instruction that's out there on how to do this. How to start a terminal. Yeah. Wait for the terminal command to open.
You have to make it idiot-proof.
Right. You know what they say about making things idiot-proof. Those idiots are so damn clever. Select your land type. Okay, so there's a little bit of sophistication there. Get all the required information from your access point. It gives you that. Enter the following command. Open a new window. Open another window. Go back to the first one. Allow data. All right, so this one is doing a... This one is not actually using that technique that I described. This is just a passive... passive attack, I think. The other one required you to inject some data. Inject some dictionary... Run aircrack. It was part of the distribution. You didn't even have to download it. Break the web key. And there it is. And 20 steps. Now, this said it would take 15 to 60 minutes to collect the data. So it was not using that other technique. Okay? So, if you're using WEP on your Wi-Fi network, you might want to rethink that. Kind of fun. So, where did they go wrong? Well, people who were not expert in cryptography were designing a system using cryptography and not talking to people who knew about cryptography. This is the danger of a class, of sitting through a class that talks about security, right? Is that you start to think you know what you're doing, and most of us don't. Even those of us who teach it don't, really, because we don't actually go out there and try to break these systems. We don't study the literature in depth to find out what the latest techniques are that people are using, find out what the mathematical limitations are, and so forth. So, I think the lesson here is really, if you're in a situation where you're having to design a system that needs this kind of cryptographic security protection, you better talk to somebody who has a lot of experience in that field, because amateurs don't cut it, as far as I can tell. Okay, there are a few slides here about improved security using other techniques, but they're not complete enough to be very useful, so we'll skip over it. Okay, so... These days, the techniques, the kinds of security that your wireless router will offer you are things called WPA, WPA2, WPA2 Personal, WPA2 Enterprise, and all of those, as I understand it, are much better than WEP in protecting against break-ins, but I have not gone out and thoroughly investigated the state of every one, so I can't tell you truly what the state is. Okay, so the last thing that we're going to talk about is, suppose you have a network. Let's go back to the full screen view. You have a network. Say your company, your home, and You want to protect it from the big bad internet. What can you put in between? That's what we call a firewall. It's a device, computer device, that somehow insulates this network from the traffic that's showing up on that network. And these days, while we think of firewalls as being useful things, I think we're also starting to realize that they are not really sufficient for protecting ourselves against the big bad internet. It's just that we don't have anything very good other than that to replace them with or add to them. But here's the problem. There's that word trusted. What does trusted mean? That these guys, if they don't behave according to your expectations, are the guys who are going to get you. That's what trusted means. That's what you mean when you say something is trusted. You're saying, if they don't do what I expect them to do, then I'm screwed. Well, okay. So here we are at WSU. We have a firewall protecting us from the big bad internet. How many people are on the WSU network? Give me a guess. This is a Google interview question. Okay, how many people are on the WSU network? What?
20,000.
20,000. Congratulations. Thank you for taking a stand. I think that's 20,000, 25,000. How would you figure that out? How many students are there? How many faculty? How many staff? You know, and you make an estimate for each of those and you come up with a number. 20,000 sounds pretty good. Out of any 20,000 random people, you know, no matter how much we like to think that the Cougars are the good guys, out of any 20,000 people, how many are bad guys?
19,500?
No, if that were the case, all of you would be bad guys, and I would not lay that on you guys. How many are bad guys?
It only takes one.
Well, it only takes one, for one thing. 1%? What's 1% of 20,000? 200. All right. So, those are the trusted good guys, all right? And they're inside the network, and they're likely to be doing things that maybe you don't wish they were doing to your machine. All right? The other thing is, how many people, if confronted with a USB stick sitting on the ground on the sidewalk, will pick it up and carry it to their computer and plug it in? What?
So many
people, right? So many people will do that. I would probably do that. But it wouldn't be a Windows computer that I would put it in. I would be careful about what computer I put it in. But lots of people will do that, okay? So somebody picks up a USB stick, plugs it into their Windows computer, auto runs the setup program that's on it, and what's just happened? Something has been installed, all right? Now we're not even talking about the people being the good guys in here. We're talking about all the computers in here being the good guys. They're not, okay? So the problem with thinking about protecting against outsider attacks these days is that just about any outsider with a little bit of will can become an insider and then be doing insider attacks. Okay? So firewall's capability to protect us is limited. by these things. But nevertheless, firewalls, we use them, we get some benefit from them, I guess. We curse them for not letting us do things that we wish we could do. We curse them for their bugs. But anyway. So what can they do? They can prevent certain kinds of denial of service attacks, but not all of them. So one common kind of denial of service attack that might be made on a machine is for an outsider to send a bunch of SYN packets to a machine. Now remember what a TCP SYN packet does. It's the first packet of a TCP connection, and when it's received, what does the receiver do? They set up the state for a TCP connection and send the SYNACK packet. What if the guy at the other end never does anything else? Then this guy has allocated resources for this connection, and if it's one connection, that's not so bad, but if it's 100,000 connections or 1,000,000 connections, that is a lot of resources taken up in their machine. Maybe enough to prevent it from being able to do other kinds of things. So a firewall may be able to detect this pattern of behavior and block those SYN packets. Other things that are done to protect against this include things on the machine itself. There are ways to avoid having to actually allocate resources if you think that's going on. Okay. Of course, we want to prevent outsiders from logging into our machines. We like to prevent them from making password guessing attacks on our SSH connections. That sort of thing the firewalls can help prevent. Again, it may not be enough, but it's certainly better than allowing it to go on. Okay. So there are three kinds of firewalls in common use. So-called stateless packet filters, stateful packet filters, and application gateways. And I think you have an assignment question, the last question, the one we talked about the one we didn't talk about last time, that asks you to define some rules for different kinds of firewalls. So remember, the goal of a firewall is to, upon receiving a packet, determine whether that packet should be let into the network or let out of the network, depending on which way it's going. And furthermore, whether it's considered sufficiently bad that somebody needs to be told about it with a log entry or something that can just be dropped silently, so on and so forth. A stateless firewall operates on the basis of what it sees in every individual packet. And that's all. Okay? So it looks at the content of the packet and it decides to forward or drop. Based on that, what does it look at? It looks at header fields. It looks at IP addresses. It looks at port numbers. It may look at the message type, and it can look at say flag fields or fragmentation fields in the header. But generally speaking, it's going to be concerned only with stuff that's in the headers of the packet. Okay, and so you can make up rules about things you want to do and things that you want to block. Block UDP, block Telnet. So, part of the reason this seems like such an obscure area is that people talk in terms of the actual numbers associated with protocols instead of the protocols. So, turns out that IP protocol 17 is UDP. So if you say block protocol 17, you're blocking UDP. Destination port 23 happens to be the well-known port associated with Telnet. So, okay, block that. This is a more interesting one. Block inbound TCP segments with ACK equals zero. So, remember what the ACK field is in a TCP header. The ACK field becomes valid and is first used when the SYN ACK packet is sent. There's actually a flag. You wouldn't actually block on the acknowledgement number being equal to zero. Rather, you'd block on the acknowledgement flag being set to false. Right. So the only packet in the TCP stream that has the acknowledgement flag set to false is the very first one. So that blocks incoming TCP connections. Why can't you block on the why can't you just block on the SYN bit? Because remember, the second packet of a TCP stream is a packet that has SYN set and ACK set. So SYN is used for the first two packets. ACK is different on the first packet alone. The SYN ACK is needed for the outgoing connections. Okay, so the design of these rules, you sort of really have to think about the states of the protocol and think about how they're reflected in the flags and numbers and port numbers and so on. Okay. Typically, the firewall rules allow things like wildcard designations for parts of IP addresses. So, anything that's on any host on my network, you designate that as, you wouldn't list all the hosts, you would just say my network, any host. No incoming TCP, drop incoming SYN packets. Well, except we saw that it really should be ACK zero packets to any IP except the web server. Okay, so you get to look at both sides of the connection and make your decision. Details. I mean, you'll really only get this when you do those exercises. So I'm not going to go over it. So one funny thing about the way firewall rules work that I've never completely understood why every firewall I've ever looked at does it this way is that the rule set is expressed as a table of rules that is processed from top to bottom. Okay? And the way it works is that you've got a packet in your hand and you've got your table and you start checking the match conditions of the rule against the packet you have in your hand. And you say, if it doesn't match, go on to the next rule. Okay? If it does match, it says allow, that packet is allowed to go through. Or if it says deny, you're done, and that packet is not allowed to go through. Okay, so you have an action and a set of match conditions. So what I think would be an interesting thing to think about from the perspective of the poor system administrator who has to create this, is ways to express these rules that were not so, what would you call it? Were not the problem. Rewind that last sentence. The problem here is that to understand the effect of this rule, you really have to understand the effect of all the rules that have come before it in the table. Okay? And that, to me, does not, from a programming language's perspective, which is what I usually bring to things, does not seem to me like a good way to have people express ideas, if you see what I mean. There's an idea, there's a policy that's associated with having this rule and having it be at a particular point in the list of rules. And since these lists of rules may have thousands of things in them, if I just try to understand the policy associated with a rule, I'm sort of lost. So I think there's some research to be done on better ways to express policies and then translate them into these tables that do sort of need to be are sort of necessary for implementation of firewalls. Although again, there are things here that suggest to me that certain kinds of tests, some equality tests, some less than or equal tests, could lead you into a branching sort of arrangement that would be more efficient than sort of searching down through all of these tables. So I think there's some work that's possible there to improve the state of firewall rule expression and implementation. Okay, so that was the stateless packet filter. A stateful packet filter basically remembers what has happened before and makes decisions based on what it already has seen. So, the previous rules that we talked about would allow something like a packet to be sent to a web server if it had the ACKBIT set, even if there was no TCP connection established, right? This packet cannot establish a TCP connection, but it nevertheless gets delivered to the web server, where the web server scratches its head and says, I don't know anything about that 5-tuple that represents that TCP connection, so it has to drop the packet. So, basically, what happens is that a stateful packet filter adds another column to this table that says, is a connection already established? Okay. It also allows much better control over UDP connections, UDP conversations, because you can say, excuse me, you can say, I will allow incoming UDP traffic from that host if I've previously had outgoing UDP traffic with it, and for a certain amount of time, okay? So that you're not subject to letting all UDP traffic in, but you can certainly have particular kinds of UDP traffic. Other things that happen in stateful firewalls are this stuff like universal plug and play. Remember, you've set up your home routers, that involves the NAT processing as well, where a machine on the inside says to the firewall, I want to have a certain kind of conversation with somebody on the outside, please allow that to happen. Okay, so the stateful firewall is again involved in that. So, connections. Application gateways. So suppose we want to allow generally I don't like their. I don't like nobody should be using Telnet. So Telnet examples should go away. Should be no Telnet examples. Suppose I want to block certain accesses to certain kinds of web pages for my kids. Well, then I want to have something that actually looks inside the HTTP request in order to see what's being asked for. An application gateway is able to do that. Your proxy server could be sort of extended in that direction, where it would be an application gateway that would block certain accesses to the outside instead of just forwarding everything. That's a good example, actually. Okay. It works at the application level, just like your proxy does. It doesn't inspect the IP headers, the telnet headers, or the TCP headers, or anything like that. Okay. So, other limitations of these things. As with all IP traffic, you don't know where it really came from, right? The source address is set in an IP packet by the machine that sends it, and there's nothing that prevents it from lying. Okay? So,
or someone else changing it, right?
Or somebody else along the way changing it. Okay? Application level gateways are a pain in the neck, really, because remember what we had to do for your proxy. We had to go in and we had to tell every browser that was going to use your proxy to use your proxy. Okay? Multiply that by 10,000 hosts, multiply that by half a dozen or a dozen different applications. You have an administrative nightmare on your hand. The joy of the firewall is that it just sits there between the inside network and the outside network, and automatically, based on its role as being a router in the system, it sees all the traffic. Okay. The degree of communication with the outside world and the level of security for many years. EECS used a firewall based on something from Microsoft that they didn't support for the last probably 6 years that we used it. And it just had bizarre behavior, right? It was just very weird. Certain websites, you would go to them and it would say, "I don't understand what that website says. I'm not going to let you talk to it." Right? Very annoying. Okay, so they're both inconvenient and they don't provide sufficient protection, which leads us to the idea of intrusion detection systems. The idea here being that we actually don't sit in line with the user's interaction with the server, but rather just sort of snoop on it as it's going on, with the idea that we will look at the packets, we will try to determine what's happening on our network, and if we detect something bad, then we will take an action, such as alerting an operator or turning off outside access if it's sufficiently bad, to help protect our systems better. This can operate both on traffic that's going outside the network, but also on internal to the network traffic. Okay, so you could find out bad things. Again, it's like all such things, it suffers from the problem of false positives and false negatives. There are many things that can happen in a network that look like something bad, but in fact are okay. And there are other things that are bad that you may look at and not notice what's wrong, and that's a so-called false negative. So the whole game here is to find techniques that have low false positive and false negative rates at the same time, and usually those things operate in competition with one another. If you get a low false positive rate, you often also get a low false negative rate, and so you don't like that. You can put them multiple places and report elsewhere. Okay, so we've spent quite a bit of time on this. We've talked about the cryptographic underpinnings. We've talked about message integrity and authentication. We've looked at ways of securing things at the application, at the transport, and the IP layers. We've talked a little bit about wireless security, and we've talked about firewalls. Okay? So, that is the end of Chapter 8. On Friday, my intention is to talk about, is basically to review for the exam that takes place at 8 o'clock on Monday morning. But the good thing about that is, I don't know if it's good from your perspective, but the good thing is that because I don't have to leave until afternoon, I'll be here for the exam. Which maybe means that if there are questions, I can answer them. Which may be helpful. So I try to design it so that it's about half the new stuff, the last third of the semester, and about half review.
Okay,
so it's weighted toward the new stuff that we haven't had it on before. Yep. Okay, any other questions?
So that would be chapter 5, 6, and 8, the new stuff, since the last...
Is that...
Because 4 was...
4 was where we got to? All right,
yeah.
So 5, 6, and 8. Okay. You know better than I. It varies from semester to semester because of where I have to place that second exam sometimes. So sometimes we get through 5 and halfway through 5. All right, so don't freeze. Wear your gloves, wear your hats. Keep well, and I'll see you Friday.